Hello there, and welcome to episode number 145 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. Okay, so that was a missed opportunity, right? The Blue Jays, despite being utterly ill with the flu bug or whatever is going through their clubhouse at the moment, the Blue Jays had an opportunity to sweep a mini, or at least a shortened two-game series against Baltimore Orioles. They did not do that. Instead, they squandered an opportunity to take the second game of the two-game set on Wednesday by blowing a one-run lead in the ninth inning against the Baltimore Orioles, with Adley Rutschman, surprise, surprise, hitting a walk-off jack to win the game. And to say it was a missed opportunity, like, it'd be a bit of an understatement. Like, that was a real gut punch of a loss. Not only because wins have been tough to come by, let alone series victories have been tough to come by lately for this club, but the Blue Jays did a number of things right on Wednesday that should have gotten them the win. Most importantly, Yusei Kikuchi was dominant once again. The bullpen, outside of Jordan Romano's ninth inning, actually it was really just one pitch in that ninth inning that he didn't locate all that effectively against Adley Rutschman. Outside of that, Romano pitched well. Jimmy Garcia came in and was lights out, because of course he was. Jimmy Garcia has arguably been the Blue Jays' best pitcher. He's certainly been their best reliever, and he's been one of the better relievers in all of baseball this year, so that was no surprise to see. And the offense was gifted a couple of runs on Wednesday, too, where a couple runners on, Bo Bichette comes to the plate, who's actually been trending in a positive direction at the plate lately, and we'll get into that here shortly. But Bo drives a ball to right field, and it just so happens to go off of Anthony Santander's glove and ultimately leads to two runs, with Springer and Vladdy coming around to score. And in typical Blue Jays fashion, they failed to continue to add on, and they ended up going 2-for-13. With runners in scoring position on the day. And ho-hum, they scored just two runs. That really should have never even happened in the first place. But they were gifted two runs. And yet they couldn't have come away with a much-needed victory and series sweep of the Baltimore Orioles. So now, as we're sitting here on May 16th, an off day for the Toronto Blue Jays, we sit here and we look at this team, and they're at 19-23, four games below 500. We're now a quarter of the way through the season, and this team is still four games under 500. They're still struggling to score runs consistently. They are struggling to hit for power consistently, just as they did a season ago. Starting pitching has been really good again. The bullpen, despite their injuries, they should come around. And they pitched really well, again, on Wednesday, outside of the one pitch that Romano failed to execute against Adley Rutschman. So certainly shouldn't be worried about the rotation or the bullpen. The offense, however, it's still an issue. And until that changes, until this team starts hitting for more power, even though they don't have enough power to begin with in that lineup because they didn't acquire enough throughout the offseason, things probably aren't going to change all that drastically for this team. And they're in a real tough spot here, right? We're in the middle of May. They're 4 games below 500. And their playoff odds, per Fangraphs, have dropped all the way to 23.2%. That's the second lowest they've been all year. And it's, you know, like, it's still conceivable that the Blue Jays can recover and end up with one of the three wildcard spots. That's still within reach. And theoretically, they could still go on a huge heater over the remaining three quarters of the season and make a push for the division, because ultimately, as we've stated repeatedly over the last couple of months, winning the division should be the priority for this team. And even though they're 9 games back of the New York Yankees right now, there's still a ton of time left for the Blue Jays to put themselves back in position where they have a realistic chance of fighting for first in the division. They're still a long ways off from that point, but it's not impossible. That being said, this is now a critical, critical stretch for the Blue Jays, right? They've had one of the tougher schedules so far this season in all of baseball, but that's about to change coming up here, because now that they've gotten through the Orioles, and sure, they have a weekend set against the Tampa Bay Rays coming up first, but once they finish that, they get to play the Chicago White Sox not once but twice. And they get to play 4 games against the Detroit Tigers. And the Detroit Tigers are no pushover. They are not the Tigers from last year or even the year before that. Their pitching staff is much improved from where it's been the last few years. Offense, yeah. That's still a work in progress for the Tigers. So, you know, the Blue Jays can actually relate to them. But pitching wise, the Tigers are still a really good team, so that, you know, you still have to go out there and compete, but the Blue Jays are a better team than the Tigers. I think we can confidently say that. We know they're a damn well better team than the White Sox. I think almost every team in baseball is. Maybe outside of the Marlins, but you're picking hairs there. So after you play 6 versus the White Sox, 4 against the Tigers, you also have a set to end May, start June against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then you got to play the Orioles again for 4. But then you have the A's, so it does ease up a little bit. But after these 3 games against the Rays, those next 13 games where you're playing the White Sox, the Tigers, and the Pirates, like, that's as big of a stretch of the season thus far for the Blue Jays, right? Because if those 13 games don't go well, and then you have to play 4 against the Orioles, you know, we'll be into June, and if this team is still hovering around 500 or even below that mark, it'd be hard not to see this team consider its options regarding selling when we get closer to the trade deadline in July. Because right now, like, it's hard to see this team being anything more than at least even a soft seller right now. You know, like, I don't see this team being a legitimate playoff contender this year. Not at the moment. Not the way they're playing so far. And again, we still have 3/4 of the way to go. And a lot can happen between now and then. But this isn't a playoff team right now. It isn't. They're last in the AL East right now. Like, it is go time for the Blue Jays. They have no more margin for error. If they want to avoid selling at the July 30th trade deadline this year, they have to get it going now. This team can't still be below 500 in June, especially not after playing 13 games against the White Sox, the Tigers, and the Pirates. That will be unacceptable. And, you know, like, somebody may have to take accountability for that, right? Like, if we get into June and the Blue Jays are below 500 and they just got through a stretch that should have been a soft part of their schedule, but they weren't able to capitalize on weaker teams, will we see John Schneider be the scapegoat for an imperfect roster? Because, like, if the Blue Jays end up selling, even if it's to a lesser extent, at the trade deadline, there's no way the Blue Jays keep Schneider after this season. Like, that, to me, that would just be, you know, insanity. Right? Repeating the same thing so many times and expecting a different result. You know, like, somebody's gonna have to be held accountable for the underperforming results from this team. And most times it's typically the manager. As unfair as that is, I just don't see a scenario where John Schneider lives through this season into next if the Blue Jays don't make the playoffs and they sell at the deadline. If they sell at the deadline, John Schneider may not even make it through the year. Let alone the hitting department too, even though that was reorganized over the winter. But if there's any sign for optimism, or two signs of optimism with this offense, it's that Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. are slowly, well, not slowly in Vlad's case, because we're on like a 2-week stretch now of him looking like his typical self again. But Bo, more recently, has started to turn a corner here, and it's only a tiny 5-game sample size here where Bo's production has started to tick up a little bit more. But ever since the series against the Minnesota Twins, he's looking like he's close to breaking out here. You know, over the last 5 games for Bo, he's got 9 hits, in 19 at-bats. Now, seven of those nine have been singles, but a lot of them have been hit hard too, where he's put 16 batted balls or 16 balls in play over his last five games. 12 of those 16 have come off his bat at 95 miles per hour or higher. And like we saw on Wednesday, he's starting to drive the ball with authority to the opposite field, which, as we all know, when Bo is at his best, that's what we see him do. And when you hear Bichette talk recently, he's talked about his mindset at the plate and the team's mindset at the plate as a whole, and how they need to be a little bit more aggressive with their approach, especially earlier in counts. And Bo has absolutely started to do that a little bit more over these last five games. You can see it in his swing percentage. That's up to 60.5% on the year. He has a 57.4% swing rate. And not a lot of those swings of late have come outside the strike zone either. He's swinging at a lot more pitches inside the strike zone. So, you know, I've become a lot more encouraged about Bichette. And I, you know, to be fully honest, I was never completely concerned with Bichette's ability to break out of this season opening slump just because of his track record over the last few years. But now it looks like it's starting to come for Bo here. He just needs a larger pool of results to actually prove that on paper. But especially when, you know, the schedule is about to soften here after we get through the Rays, that should give Bichette a nice little runway here to really do some damage here against, you know, lesser pitching staffs. I mean, like, the White Sox have Garrett Crochet, but, like, outside of him, their pitching staff's pretty meh. And the Pirates, I mean, they got two of the better young starting pitchers in baseball, and Jerry Jones and Paul Skeen, but collectively, the Blue Jays should, and I want to emphasize, should do some damage against their starters and relievers. And obviously, we already talked about the Tigers. But, you know, again, like, if the Blue Jays are actually going to go anywhere this year, they need Bichette to be peak Bo Bichette. And we haven't gotten that so far, but if these last five games are a sign of what's to come, well, maybe there are still brighter days ahead for this offense. And especially because of the way Vladimir Guerrero Jr. has been mashing at the plate over his last 15 games. You know, like, this isn't a small sample size like with Bo. We're now talking about a 15 game sample size for Vlad, where he has looked a lot more like the 2021, dare I say, Vladdy that we saw, where he just decides, okay, I'm taking over this game. You know, we saw that earlier this week against the Minnesota Twins, where the Blue Jays exploded in a massive comeback for double-digit runs, the first time they've ever scored 10 or more in a game this year. And in that contest, Vlad went 4-for-5, very easily could have went 5-for-5. And by far had his best game of the year. And You know, if we dive into the numbers here over the last 15 games for Vladdy, it's remarkable. Now, he's not hitting for a lot of power just yet. A lot of his hits have gone for singles. You know, of the 23 hits he has over these last 15 games, only 4 of them have gone for extra bases. But all things considered, the fact that Vladdy is recording a boatload of hits here, that's the important part, right? The fact that he, over his last 15 games, has a 397 average with a 470 on base percentage and a 183 WRC plus, those are the bigger takeaways. You know, the fact that he has a 103 isolated power and a 500 slugging percentage, you know, that's certainly worth mentioning, but by no means is it an asterisk on Vladdy's performance. And I want to keep going into the numbers here as well, because like with Bo, Vladdy is crushing the ball right now, like more than usual Vlad standards. And let me outline that for you, because on the year, Vladdy has a 57.3 hard hit percentage. Over his last 15 games, that figure is up to 66.7%. And he also has a barrel rate of 17.8%. Now, it's not just the hard contact for Vlad, right? He's never struggled with hitting the ball hard. But what's been different over these last 15 games is his batted ball distribution, where not everything that Vlad hits is going directly into the ground. Instead, he's hitting balls on a line now. And that's showcased in the fact that he has a 28.9% line drive rate over these last 15 games. And for context, on the year, Vladdy's line drive percentage is at 21.8%. So, not only is Vlad hitting the ball hard, but he's actually squaring it up for line drives. Like that, amongst anything else, should make you feel really encouraged about where Vladdy's at right now. And, you know, the fact too that despite turning the corner with his hitting ability, Vladdy is still remaining extremely disciplined at the plate. Like, he still has a 12.1% walk rate over these 15 games to a 19.7% strikeout rate. You know, like, pretty good there. And as well, like, to get back to the hard hit conversation, or quality of contact conversation, not only is Vlad, like, mashing balls, he's destroying them. Like, destroying them over 100 miles an hour type of mashing. Where, of Vlad's last 23 hits over this 15-game span, 15 of them have produced an exit velocity of 100 miles per hour or higher. That's tied for second most in all of baseball, behind only Aaron Judge, who leads the majors with 19 since April 27th, which is when Vladdy's 15-game span here started. You know, like, that's some good company to be with. The fact that he is absolutely tearing the cover off the ball right now. Now, I will say too, because this is one of the things that's separating Vlad 2024 to Vlad 2021. And that's Guerrero's ability to do damage or create damage off of high velocity. That's something he's still struggling with right now. where like he's absolutely having no problem timing up breaking balls and off-speed pitches and fastballs as well that are below 95 miles per hour, right? If Vladdy gets a, you know, a 92 mile per hour heater down the middle, he's obliterating it. But when that pitch is in the mid to high 90s, he's getting jammed or he's fouling it off. It's like that's the one area where Vlad still needs to improve, where, as we can see by the numbers here, or at least I can see, and I'm going to read them off to you, Vlad has a 343 slugging percentage and a 292 expected slug versus fastballs at 95 miles per hour or higher this season. And not only that, Vladdy has a 20.7% whiff rate and a 15% strikeout rate against those offerings this season. Both of those metrics are the highest of his career since 2021. They're the highest of his career over his last four seasons. Now, if we want to compare to 2021, against 95 mile per hour fastballs, Vlad had a whiff rate of 17.7% and a strikeout rate of 12%. Even last year, right? Even last year when 2023 was so disappointing for Vladdy, he was still doing really well, all things considered, against high velo fastballs, where he had a slugging percentage of 421 and an expected slug of 415. Like, if that's, you know, for regular baseball or for regular major leaguers, you'll take those numbers. Obviously, for Vlad's standards, that's a disappointment. But when you compare him to this year, it's like, okay, like if that's the floor, Vladdy still needs to get there this year. And we know he can't. Will he get to, you know, the 655 slug and the 678 expected slug that he hit and that plus 18 run value that he had against high velo fastballs in 2021? Maybe not. But can he at least get to a 421 slug and a 415 expected slug and a plus four run value? Yeah, absolutely. Now, if he can get closer to the 468 slug and the 451 expected slug that he had versus high velo fastballs in 2022, that would be even better. But for right now, we just need Vladdy to get back to his floor versus high velo heaters. Once he does that, the sky should be the limit for him. With the way with the quality swing decisions that he's had over these last 15 games, the remarkable quality of contact and batted ball distribution that he's displayed as well, like, he's really, really close. And I know we've said that a lot about Vladdy here, not just in 2024, but going back to last year as well, right? Where there were stretches where Vlad just looked so close to breaking out, and he was lacking the consistency that was needed to really prove that. And, you know, of course, like, in the context of 162 games, a 15-game span is not convincing enough just yet to really set aside any sort of lingering doubts. But you look at all the elements involved here with Vlad, and it's like, okay, like, yeah, there's something here with him where it's, you know, it seems like it's not just one of those stints that we've seen previously where, okay, like, this is going to be a good stretch from Vlad, but he's going to struggle for the next 2-3 weeks once he comes out of it. You know, if he can maintain all of these factors here, if he can maintain the swing decisions that he's having right now, batted ball distribution, the quality of contact, if he can maintain all of that and improve his mechanics just a little bit more, and Joe Soto had a great breakdown on this earlier this week on one of the Blue Jays pregame shows, where he broke down Vladdy's mechanics here and talked about how he wants to see Vlad explode with his front shoulder a little bit more and rotate his upper half just a bit more so he can really turn on those inside fastballs and not get jammed when they're, you know, mid to high 90s coming at him. Once he gets that down, again, like, he's going to really catch fire here. But, again, like, we're going to need more than a 15-game sample size, obviously, to really feel convinced. But if Vlad and Bo can get going here, that's really going to help the Blue Jays offense catch some momentum. And they really need it, too, because, like, this identity of quality plate discipline and trying to string hits together, it's just, it's not a recipe for success with the way the Blue Jays roster is constructed. You know, they're not built of, you know, Whit Merrifields 1-9, right? Guys who just make fantastic, they're really good at making consistent contact and putting balls in play. Like, that's not who they are. They need to hit for more power here, right? And, like, they can't be a team that's ranked 26th in the majors in home runs, or tied for 26th in the majors in home runs, and sit 24th or tied for 23rd in the major leagues in slugging percentage with a 359 as a team. You know, like, with the names in this lineup, the Blue Jays should be hitting for more power. There's no question about it. Obviously, like I said before, they don't have enough power to be one of the better teams in baseball. But you can certainly get more out of Vlad and Bo in the power department. There's no question about that. There should be better days ahead of Springer as well, but I don't think those days are going to come with him in the leadoff spot. I really don't. And, you know, we've only seen Davis Schneider hit leadoff in 4 games, I believe, so far. But his performance during that comeback against the Twins on Saturday, it showed you that, okay, Davis Schneider can handle hitting leadoff. And with the way Springer has struggled so far, like, how many more chances are you going to give this guy before you realize, okay, like, he's not helping us, he's hurting us atop of the order? And there aren't many other players on the roster who, you know, would make an ideal leadoff hitter, but Davis Schneider absolutely is. And I think it's just time to give him a run, an extended runway to hit leadoff, you know, more than just 4 games. You know, we need to see, like, honestly, what I would love to see is over these 13 games coming up here against the White Sox and the Tigers and the Pirates, let Davis Schneider hit leadoff for that stretch. And just see how he does, right? How can it be any worse than what you've gotten out of George Springer so far? It can't be. Because the Blue Jays, with Springer hitting leadoff, have been one of the worst teams in the majors from that leadoff position. You know, and It pains me to see how much the Blue Jays have underutilized Davis Schneider this season. It really does. You know, because it's almost like how much more does he have to prove to show you that he deserves to be hitting in the top half of the order? Right? Like, especially with the adjustments he's made already this season, where he's standing more upright in the box so he can actually make contact with those pitches in the upper quadrant of the strike zone, a location that previously he's really whiffed a ton at. And now he hasn't completely neutralized that weakness, but at the same time, he's able to foul off pitches now so he can actually battle, like we saw him do in Baltimore, where he grinded during one of his at-bats and came out victorious. You know, so I truly think it's time. I wrote about it for Jays Nation earlier this week, just going through the potential idea of whether or not it's time to pass the mantle of leadoff hitter from George Springer to Davis Schneider, just because of what we've seen from Schneider already this season and how much Springer has struggled. And I just don't know where George Springer is going to fall here, right? It's just, he's been outstanding at earning walks and not striking out, but your leadoff hitter can't struggle as much as he has in terms of putting balls in play and generating hard contact. So if it were up to me, Springer would regularly hit sixth or seventh, and that would allow Davis Schneider to get a nice little runway here of hitting leadoff and see what he can give the Blue Jays, right? Because ultimately, if it clicks, that along with Vladdy, the way he's playing, how much Bo has surged here over these last five games, that can start to get things moving here for the offense. And maybe they start to come out of this, you know, month and a half inconsistent skid here where, you know, they show encouraging signs, but at other times they get lucky and only score twice against the Orioles. Right? So I think it's a long time that the Blue Jays make a more permanent switch at the leadoff spot. I mean, that's not to say that, you know, Springer should never hit leadoff ever again, but for the next few weeks, honestly, I don't see why the Blue Jays don't bat Schneider leadoff. I know he struggled a little bit in the few games, but I just think he needs more of a longer leash here to really let him sort of cook, so to speak, right? And see if that's a role he can really thrive in moving forward. Because if it is, I would just keep him there long term. You know, because that's a piece that you're invested in, right? That can really, Davis Schneider can emerge into a really nice core piece for the Blue Jays here, and they need more of that from their prospect system, right? They need those younger, inexpensive guys to emerge and make considerable contributions, and we've seen that so far from Davis Schneider. The Blue Jays just need to put him in more positions where he can succeed and have a significant enough impact that he's capable of producing for them. Because one way or another, if the Blue Jays don't ultimately provide consistent run support and a larger margin for error for the pitching staff, none of this is going to work. Like, Kikuchi has been one of the best starting pitchers in the major leagues this season. In 9 starts, he has a 1.7 Fangraphs wins above replacement rating. That's tied for 6th highest in the major leagues this season. He's tied with Tyler Glasnow in Fangraphs WAR. Right? Like, as good as Kikuchi has been this season, he should have more than 2 wins on the year. Right? He should have been drinking some Japanese whiskey in the early afternoon on Wednesday. Right? He pitched his ass off, and he's done so repeatedly for the Blue Jays this year, and hasn't been rewarded enough for it because of the lack of run support that he's gotten. And he's not the only one either, right? Kevin Gausman's in the same boat. Chris Bassett, the same thing. The offense just isn't scoring enough. And until they do, we're going to continue to see blown games like we did on Wednesday, because the pitching staff and the defense have to play perfectly for this team to win. Right? If the Blue Jays, you know, if they even scored a few more runs on Wednesday, Romano can pitch a little bit more comfortably. Maybe he doesn't miss inside to Adley Rutschman. But even if he does, the Blue Jays would still be on top, right? They would have been leading 4-3 on Wednesday after that home run. And maybe they still come out victorious and they sweep the Orioles, which has become impossible since Rutschman came up and made his major league debut with Baltimore. They haven't been swept since. The Blue Jays had an opportunity to do that on Wednesday, and they squandered it because they didn't score enough. They didn't provide a large enough margin for error for the pitching staff and the defense, something they haven't done all year, or at least consistently enough all year. So, here we are. Here we are left wondering what this team is going to look like in a few weeks as we get closer to June. Because if you look at the roster here, if the Blue Jays do end up, let's say, soft selling, there are a number of intriguing pieces on their roster that would certainly fetch them quality returns. Right? Starting with Yusei Kikuchi. He's a free agent after the end of this season. Starting pitching is always, always in demand around the trade deadline. Especially for a guy like Kikuchi, who's pitching like a middle of the rotation arm, if not like a solid number 2. And a team out there could get him at a $10 million salary. And then you have Jimmy Garcia. He's in the final year of his deal. Been one of the better relievers in all baseball. There would be a long list of teams chomping at the bit wanting to trade for Kikuchi and Jimmy Garcia. No question about it. You also have Danny Jansen, too. He's a free agent after this year. He hasn't, you know, stayed healthy, obviously. But in terms of a power-hitting catcher, he would absolutely be a top target out there. You also have Trevor Richards. You know, any team out there would love to add a swing and miss arm like his to their bullpen. Kevin Kiermaier, too, for a team that, you know, is struggling with their outfield defense, why not add one of the best outfield defenders of all time? And Justin Turner, too. Veteran hitter, somebody needing, you know, a team out there that needs to add a little bit more length to their lineup. Why not add his bat, expiring deal, to the lineup? Right? Like, I could see if the Blue Jays actually become sellers, those are all pieces that they would probably trade away. Because they'd have to. Right? The season would be lost. Why would you risk losing them for nothing? Now, in terms of anything beyond players on expiring deals, for the Blue Jays to say trade Bo Bichette or Vladimir Guerrero Jr., things would have to go completely off the rails here. And to the point where the Blue Jays' chances of competing next year are greatly impacted. And even now, like, you're not trading Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Bo Bichette the way they've performed so far. Like, that would be not selling them for pennies on the dollar, but, like, you wouldn't be getting their full value in a return. And by trading them, you are absolutely signaling a full-scale teardown. Right? You're not retooling if you trade your top two cornerstones of the franchise. Right? Then you look into, okay, like, are we listening? Like, if the Blue Jays were to trade Bo and Vladdy, you're listening on Kevin Gausman, Chris Bassett, Jose Barrios, who can opt out of his contract after 2026. You'd be listening on, you know, whatever takers you could get for George Springer, even though you'd absolutely have to retain some money on that deal, which would not be nice, but you'd at least get his contract off the books. You know, like, and Romano as well, Biggio, Meza, Swanson, Cabrera, even Varsho. But again, like, where this team is at right now, I don't see that point coming anytime soon. Right? You'd have to see injuries, like significant injuries to pitchers that would impact their availability in 2025. You'd have to be really convinced that, okay, like, there's something drastically wrong with both Vladdy and Bo. And as we've seen from their results recently, you'd be ridiculous to think that at this point. So, you know, to me, the most realistic outcome for the Blue Jays, if they're still below 500, let's say a month from now, is that they sell off expiring deals that helps replenish their mediocre, like their bottom third farm system, and hopefully allows them to come back stronger and deeper next season, right? Because that can happen. All you have to do is look at a deal like when the Texas Rangers acquired Aroldis Chapman last year. A unique scenario because of Cole Reagan's injury history. But the Kansas City Royals added a top-of-the-rotation arm in Cole Reagan's for an expiring Aroldis Chapman, right? That's not going to happen every time, but those are the types of deals that could be out there for players like Yusei Kikuchi and Jimmy Garcia. So it would certainly be worth exploring if the Blue Jays are absolutely headed towards missing the playoffs, which is why these next few weeks are so crucial, because it could very easily determine the Blue Jays' fate towards the trade deadline. So, it's now or never for this team. If they're going to make a push for the playoffs, it needs to start now. And it should have started with a victory on Wednesday, but it didn't. So now, to me, they need to be aiming to take 2 of 3 against the against the Tampa Bay Rays this weekend and hope that builds some momentum heading into that 13-game stretch where they face the White Sox, the Tigers, and the Pirates. And they really need to catch fire there to help dig themselves out of this hole that they've dug themselves into over this first month and a half of the season. But it starts and ends with the offense. And, of course, a lot of that depends on whether or not Vlad and Bo can continue their stretches that they've been on of late. So, hopefully that happens because, I certainly want to have more positive things to talk about here as we move into the summer months rather than talking about which players could go where in a potential deadline sell-off for the Blue Jays. But I guess we'll find out one way or another. But that does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.